This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It is good to have you along for this afternoon's WPGM Community Forum. We're going to be talking about juvenile idiopathic arthritis today. It is JIA Awareness Month across the nation. And here in Pennsylvania, the last several Julys have been declared as such, thanks to a resolution sponsored by State Representative Linda Schlegel-Culver. We want to talk about JIA today, an illness that affects about 300,000 children across the United States. We'll talk today with Dr. Lane Weaver from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia about this arthritis in children. It comes in many forms. We'll talk about those and what's being done and spread the awareness today on the program. Thanks for joining us. Let's begin with a bit of a look at the illness itself with Dr. Weaver.
The current up-to-date terminology for juvenile arthritis is called juvenile idiopathic arthritis, or JIA for short. And breaking that down, it means that it occurs in children less than 16 years of age. We don't know or understand exactly how it is caused, essentially the idiopathic form of it. And then it's a form of arthritis where there's inflammation in the joint. And this is somewhat an update in terms of the terminology from JRA, or juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. Juvenile rheumatoid arthritis is piggybacking off of the terminology used in adults for rheumatoid arthritis. But juvenile idiopathic arthritis is very different from rheumatoid arthritis in adults and does actually occur in about 1 in 1,000 children. And so the reason we like to differentiate between these terminologies is not only is it occurring in children, but there's actually 8 different categories of juvenile arthritis as well. And so that allows us to differentiate and separate the terminology from what is used in adult rheumatoid arthritis.
And I would think that the different types would make it difficult to put a number on how many kids suffer because you've got so many variations. But is there a generally accepted term to say this is how many kids we're dealing with across the country?
Yeah, it's about 1 in 1,000. And so the way that I like to think about it is if you're one of your children is in a high school or a school with about 1,000 children, there's probably odds are that one of those individuals in that school is going to be affected. Now, that doesn't mean that you may know that individual, or even if you do know that individual, you may not be able to even tell that they have arthritis. It depends on when they're diagnosed and what medications they're on and certainly the type of arthritis. But luckily for the children that we treat, there are actually very, very good therapies that we have, and we can actually reach remission or inactive disease in the majority of the patients that we treat with juvenile arthritis today.
How far back was this identified as a separate condition in children and you know, that studying began on it?
So rheumatoid, interestingly, in adults, it's unknown a little bit more, but it dates back hundreds of years in terms of the first individual that was diagnosed in rheumatoid arthritis. But in children, it's probably more of a recent understanding or identification of this disease, probably because it's a little bit more rare than it occurs in adults. In adults, it occurs in about 1 in 100 individuals, and so it's much more frequent in adults. And so being that in our population, there's not quite as large of a population as children as adults, and because it's a more rare condition, it's harder to actually find these individuals. But it certainly dates back at least certainly 50, 60, 70 years, which really coincides with the onset of pediatric rheumatology as an independent subspecialty in pediatrics. And so all of these things were becoming much more well-known or established over the past few decades, and certainly the treatments oftentimes start off in adults but peter down to children, and we're able to take advantage of many of the medications that are used for adult rheumatoid arthritis that work very similarly and very well for children with the disease as well. But certainly the condition has been around for many, many decades and has been well recognized and well studied.
Yet there aren't really that many pediatric rheumatologists out there, correct?
That's correct. So globally, this disease is not restricted to the United States, and it is seen across the world and all different countries as well. But just here in the United States, there's only about a few hundred pediatric rheumatologists, and they're certainly centered around the large cities in the country, too, which makes it a real problem in terms of access for patients to actually be diagnosed. And so I have patients that aren't able to come all the way down to Philadelphia on a regular basis, and I have to work with primary care physicians or other physicians to really help take care of these patients and individuals. Certainly, you can find an adult rheumatologist who may be able to help as well. But as I said before, adult rheumatoid arthritis is very different than childhood onset juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And so they might not understand the full extent of disease or knows the types of things that they need to be watching out for because they might differ between adults and children with chronic arthritis. And so it certainly is a problem. There are whole states in the country that don't have a pediatric rheumatologist. And so, for instance, there are pediatric rheumatologists who practice in Seattle, Washington, but they fly to Montana or fly to Alaska for weeks at a time to be able to care for individuals in those states that don't have access to pediatric rheumatologists otherwise.
Where have the treatments come in the last 10 years, 20 years? You know, how much progress has been made?
It's quite remarkable how much progress has been made in the past 20 years. There's been the medications have changed from weaker immunosuppressive therapies that are effective but not fully effective and have many, many side effects, in fact, to medications that have fewer side effects and work better. And so we've come quite a far way in the past 20 or 30 years. My colleagues who have been practicing for that long have seen children very frequently in wheelchairs because they were so disabled from their juvenile arthritis. But now that is very, very uncommon for that to occur. And so we have great therapies. And so how I like to tell my patients who are initially diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic arthritis is that your child should be able to live a completely normal life. And we are many, many times able to get them into complete remission where another individual or even family friends wouldn't even know that they had a diagnosis of juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And so that's quite remarkable that we can treat to the point where they can play sports, they can be elite athletes, they can do all the other things that their peers are able to do, but they might have to come and see a pediatric rheumatologist on a more frequent basis, a few times a year or more frequent, depending on how severe their disease is. And then they would also have to stay up to date in terms of taking their medications and being sure that their disease does remain inactive, which is interesting because about 25% of our patients will come to us and they don't have any symptoms whatsoever, but we do our examination and we can find active arthritis. And that's really important to us, because if our patients have active arthritis, that means that they're accruing constant damage to their joints. And if we're able to calm even those patients without any symptoms, make sure that their arthritis is in remission, we can prevent long-term damage and long-term disability for those individuals. And we certainly have the wherewithal and the knowledge and the tools in terms of our treatments and our medications to actually help and ensure that the majority of our patients are able to be in remission and live full, healthy lives and be able to do whatever they need to be able to do.
And certainly awareness of that for each parent is crucial, because the quicker you get treatment underway, like you said, the less damage there will be.
That is certainly true. And so as we talk about the paucity of pediatric rheumatologists across the country, certainly outreach is a very important thing. And we do outreach in a number of different ways, and we as in the pediatric rheumatology community. And so there are private foundations such as the Arthritis Foundation or the Rheumatology Research Foundation that will actually have preceptorships where a pediatric rheumatologist, for instance, that works in Philadelphia can travel to a location where there are no pediatric rheumatologists, such as West Virginia, and give a lecture or meet with the trainees who are coming through medical school or residency programs and going into pediatrics, so that we can begin to make all of these trainees aware of the different conditions that we treat, how important it is to recognize and be able to identify these individuals with juvenile arthritis, so that they can either seek out care where it's necessary or really consult with an expert to help take care of patients if they don't have immediate access to a pediatric rheumatologist in their location.
Okay. Anything big on the horizon you see, like, you know, breakthroughs in how this is dealt with or treated?
So all of the time there is a joint effort between the researchers who are in academic centers to be able to diagnose earlier, better, be able to offer prognostication, meaning that we're able to have markers that will enable us to say how severe a patient's disease is, or help us to determine when they are able to stop a medication, or to be able to identify disease when we can't see it on our exam. All of those types of studies are ongoing. We have many of them down at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. We have over probably 10 or 15 different active studies going on currently to answer many of these questions. In addition to interfacing and interacting with the pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies who are bringing forward the latest and greatest medications for our patients. And so, as I said before, over the past 20 or 25 years, we've had a revolution in terms of the way that we've been able to treat this because of these new medications that have come out. In addition, those medications mainly are injectable medications, and so these are given once a week as a needle or a shot. And you can imagine treating patients that are 2-3 years of age all the way up to 16, 17, 18, that this could be problematic for those individuals. And it is oftentimes a struggle for families to be able to give these medications to them. And so in the past, I'd say 5 years, there's a couple of new medications that are actually oral medications that have been shown to be very promising in adults. They are now being tested and studied in juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And there's been some very promising and very good results that are coming out. So hopefully these oral medications will also be approved for children with juvenile arthritis. And we'll be able to treat them with oral medication so that they may not need to go on to one of these injectable medications moving forward.
That's Dr. Lane Weaver from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, a pediatric rheumatologist. And as you heard, there are not that many of them out there. We've been talking about JIA, Juvenile Idiopathic Arthritis Awareness Month, which is being observed in Pennsylvania during the month of July. Dr. Weaver, thank you for being with us on the WPGM Community Forum.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.